Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
Jerry's loving this embarrassment of a Blue Jays season. They're an absolute tire fire.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Gold Dust, Jeff O'Neill. And Jamie Noodles McGlynn.
That's my new name, Gold Dust.
Gold Dust. That remember that? It's a wrestling reference.
I don't remember that.
Hang on a sec. My earphone's not in. I got plugged in.
You got to play.
Hang on.
Tell me that's not him right now. Dude, we're on the air. Get your headphones in.
I just wasn't ready for a audio play.
Yeah, Gold Dust. All right,
so Gold Dust is a
wrestler. That is an absolutely outstanding drop. And, you know, there's a reason we're playing this and why we're calling
it
Gold Dust.
All right, fire it up again.
Play it one more time. Oh, you are gold dust on this show, because when in doubt, you clean and you sniff.
You have to do a deep sniff to see if there's any lingering effects.
Gold dust, WWE.
With any type of garment. But yeah. If it's an undergarment, you
man.
Especially have to be careful with that.
Play it one more time. Doing there.
Well, he's just like, he kind of plays, I don't know what his whole role was, man.
What's
he was a really weird
there,
dude. Like,
what was he doing there?
He was a wrestler,
yeah,
right? But
yeah,
he was like a kind of a creepy guy. Anyway, people are yelling back there, but look him up. People,
I'm looking at him online right now. This guy is, he looks like Dee Snider from Twisted Sister.
Well, you know who he is? He's Dusty Rhodes' kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Was it Dusty Rhodes? Yeah, Dusty,
yeah,
the American Dream, right? The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. It's his kid.
This guy's a lunatic.
But he played this weirdo Gold Dust and...
Yeah. Bit of a trailblazer when it came to that.
But was he a jobber?
Why was he a trailblazer?
Gold Dust?
Yeah.
There wasn't really anybody like him before that, with that kind of gimmick.
Because he like had the face paint and the weird
kind
of body.
Yeah, it was a little out there for that time.
Like,
but he's also wrestling a guy right now I'm watching that has tassels on. Like, which one's the jobber? Like, I don't even know.
I think he was a heel. I don't know, man.
Yeah, Gold Dust was a heel. Yeah.
Okay, so he was a bad guy, but.
There's jobber and heel, and then the star.
And then good guy, I guess.
Baby face.
Baby face is like, the name of a good
that's
guy?
That's a good guy, yeah.
Like the Macho right. Man and Hacksaw Jim Duggan,
yeah.
Are they baby,
baby faces?
Faces?
We got to update our
I'm so
guys
far
that we're
behind.
Using
like
them
I'm, yeah,
I
I'm,
hate it.
I'm
so
throwing out
stupid.
Names that are like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the guy would walk around with like a 2x4.
2x4 and the American flag.
Yeah.
He's so patriotic.
Yeah, it was just weird.
Anyway, the O-Dog is Gold Dust. Jamie Noodles McGlynn in here as well. Ray's coming up here in a moment. Garrett Ranko joined us at 6:30, so he didn't make the cut. I don't think anybody was expecting him to make the cut. But based on his score, like if you look at his score at the end of the tournament, any other tournament, you'd be like, ooh, that didn't work out so well for him. But because this course played as difficult as it played, he just melded in with everybody else. Like McIlroy, Woods, and Spieth didn't make the cut.
I think Brandel Chamblee summed it up best when he said, if you look at what technology is and the way these guys hit the golf ball nowadays, for a guy like Rory McIlroy to shoot 80, sorry, clown golf. Bryson DeChambeau called it clown golf, and that's what I think it was.
You didn't enjoy any of this weekend.
The biggest indictment I can think of for the tournament, Brian, is I had zero. I'm usually automatic Sunday from 4 till 7 watching the final round of any PGA Tour event. This Sunday was Father's Day, but I didn't care if I watched it. I did not watch 1 second of it. And I'm like, I don't want to watch these guys slash it around like that.
Well, I mean, it wasn't, I didn't see the whole closing round or finishing round yesterday. I saw Koepka come in the final four or five holes.
Yeah, I mean, one guy shot 63 yesterday. That was
Fleetwood, and he got out early. And
it was an outlier, though.
Like, yeah. It was, yeah.
It wasn't a very entertaining weekend.
Yeah, it's not entertaining.
Just watching it. It was
And for the growth of the game, like, you're going to get people interested in golf. I don't think you can do it by them watching
that
garbage.
For a casual fan, it wasn't very good.
But it had moments, though. There was theater to it. That's what I enjoyed about it. There was theater. I mean, the Mickelson gong show on Saturday, where we all agreed he should have been disqualified for that. But still, it's a memorable moment. The fact that these guys were so disheveled on the course.
Right.
I mean, they were honestly, they looked like Happy Gilmore at times. Like, they are chopping it all over the place. They can't putt. They're stepping back and rereading like three or four different times over the course of one putt. Dustin Johnson, he never looked comfortable. Never.
Yeah.
He finished third and he never looked comfortable. Like,
he's
that good, but he was also that uncomfortable and he was that uncertain of how he was reading the putts and reading the greens. He kept stepping back and being like, I don't think I have a clue where this is going. And he, more often than not,
didn't. Well, that was a bit of an unraveling too. He was minus four in control of that golf tournament, and it all kind of went south on him.
Yeah, he did. He crapped it away over the weekend. But even yesterday, like, he had chances to get back into the tournament.
I was watching one where he had a long putt, a really long. It was at the far end of the green. And he missed the hole. He was short of the hole, but he was 10 feet wide right. And that's where it comes back to, Brian, you're like, he had no idea how the greens were reading. Like, it was...
It was mini putt.
It was like a mini putt.
Like, you're hitting it into the pond, and if it floats out the right way, you might get
you're
a hole in one.
Hitting it into the pinwheel. And,
yeah, but that's what it was for a lot of these guys.
For a casual fan, in watching it, I just wasn't entertained.
Okay.
I thought that there was, and the guys who were hitting it well were no names to me. Like, well, they weren't your top 10. They weren't, you know, they weren't household names.
It's interesting because now Koepka has to be a household name now. I mean, last year he won it.
US Opens.
Yes. You win back to back. First time that's happened since Curtis Strange in the late 80s. You're a household name.
Yes.
Right? He's a bomber, but he's got a short game. He's got some arrogance to him. Did you see his interview post game with Bob Weeks?
I did not.
Where I don't remember the exact quotes, but basically
he likes himself.
Anything under 8 feet, he's like, I'm a great putter. I'm great. Like, that's, and I was like, okay, like, you're right. I mean, you just won back to back U.S. Opens. I mean, you're an impressive guy, and you're a household name now, and you got millions in the bank, and you got a beautiful girlfriend, and you're a good-looking guy. You got, you know, you're on top of the world, but
might want to
mix in some humility.
Humility.
See the walk that he walks around with? It is just incredible.
A lot of them have that. Dustin Johnson's got that. Finau's got the same one. It's all the new styles, and like, they've all got the gray on gray. Oh, yeah. And
Koepka's got the boy small golf shirt on with the arms just popping out of it.
Yeah. They're pretty pretty high on themselves.
Yeah.
But they're all good players. You know,
When it goes south,
good.
That walk and the way that they conduct themselves, it always comes back to bite you in the ass. Because when's the most, I guess, amount of humility you've seen in Tiger? Is when he fell. Right?
Yeah, true enough.
Because Tiger, on the way up,
he was known
as a, you know, pretty tough to deal with. And then on the way down, people are wanting to take a shot at you because of the way you treated people on the way up. I always remember that.
They always say, boys, be nice to the people on the way up, because they're the same ones you see
on the way down.
Well, now Tiger, like, I saw the odds, he's getting decent odds at the British Open, but...
Why? How?
People are going to put money down on him. Like, that's why you give him decent odds, because you're just stealing money. You know he's not going to win the tournament. But, you know, the Masters, he was okay. He wasn't great. Here, he doesn't even make the cut. Although, this feels like a throwaway. Like, McIlroy didn't make it. Spieth didn't make it. A bunch of really good players didn't make it. Even guys that did make it, like Mickelson, they were so far back, it didn't matter. But he can't put together complete rounds at major tournaments. So, I don't know what the buildup will be in terms of Tiger Woods and his standing at the Open, but it's a lot quicker than the Masters to the U.S. Open. It's next month. The next couple of months, we have majors. So we'll talk about that later in the hour. Garrett Rank will join us. NHL ref, golf amateur, who was a part of the U.S.
Friend
Open
of the
this past weekend.
Too.
And friend of the show.
Yes.
Barry Trotz with an all-time mic drop today. So he wins the Cup with Washington, and that kicked into gear a two-year contract extension.
Yep.
With a bonus of like $300,000 a year, which is a lot of money in the real world, but kind of chump change for what coaches are making right now, especially prominent coach changes or coaches in the NHL. And he announced today he's resigning. He's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
As you should. If you don't want to
see you later.
You don't want to make me feel welcome and treat me like a coach that just won the Stanley Cup with a great record in the NHL. And
we talked
about it in the first hour, Brian.
You're right.
Coach of the Year, two President's Trophy, and then I gave you the Stanley Cup. And what? You don't want to pay me? No. Something's fishy there.
Yeah, man. Something's fishy.
All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. What do you make of that Barry Trotz news?
Well, just what we had heard down the stretch there and in the playoffs, there really wasn't a whole ton of communication between McClellan and Trotz towards the end of the season. Two coaches on that out of the four-man staff were extended prior to the season. Todd Reirden and Blaine Forsyth were extended. Lane Lambert, who came with Barry from Nashville, was not extended either. So that the two guys that were kind of together were Trotz and Lambert. The other two guys were together. So it was kind of an uncomfortable sort of deal anyway. And so I just thought the cup made it really uncomfortable or uneasy. Like, it's hard to walk away from your coach that you just won with. But I think this was pretty well set in the die. Like, it was, unless they were going to come up with some strange new offer that hadn't even been discussed, it was almost like it was going to happen win or lose anyway.
You think it's obvious where he ends up, Ray? There's only one opening.
Well, I wonder, are there any teams that might take a look at their coach now and say, oh, we might have a better option here?
Yeah. Why am I hearing rumblings about Bruce Boudreaux? People are unhappy with that in Minnesota, or have you heard any of that nonsense?
Yeah, that. Well, when they were doing the GM search, one of the criteria was that Leopold, the owner there, Craig Leopold, did not want, or doesn't think, and doesn't want a total rebuild. He wants, as he called it, some tweaking of the roster, and that Boudreaux would stay as coach. Boudreaux has 2 years left on his deal. And so that's kind of nice protection for him to at least get started with the new general manager, which is Paul Fenton. But I mean, Minnesota is a funny thing because they've made the playoffs, I think, 6 or 8 years. They're pretty good. They just don't win. They don't get far enough to satisfy what they want to do. And so there's so many layers to that one. There's, the Nashville connection through Leopold and Ryan Suter, and now Paul Fenton. Chuck Fletcher had traded away some picks to try and make the team more relevant. They kind of kicked around the expansion deal and ended up losing Alex Tuch and Eric Halla in it because they wanted to protect their defense. But I don't know. A lot of the stuff probably is more complicated than any of us guys really kind of get our feet into. But I would think that, the coach was going to stay. That was one thing that was going to happen in Minnesota for sure.
So Bob McKenzie tweets out earlier today that if John Tavares gets to next Monday, which would be the negotiating period where free agents can talk to whoever they want to, I should point out, Darren Dreger tweeted out, if it gets to that point, Tavares expected to meet between 3 and 5 teams at his agency in LA.
So it's not going to be the big parade around,
no,
right?
No, it's not going to be 12 or 15 teams. And those teams are going to know who they are, and the teams on the outside looking in are going to know who they are. But Bob tweeted out that one of those teams, now I don't know if it'll be one of the final 3 or 5, but the Leafs are expected to make a run at him, or at least have a conversation with him. And he even said that there's been some chatter that they put the ice in recently at the ACC, and maybe it's involving a promotional video that could include some current players. Now, these guys scoffed at that idea that, that's lame, and why do you have to do that? I think it comes down to, there's part of it's creativity. Secondly, I think it just weighs on you. You're like, this is such a monumental moment for any team, not just the Maple Leafs. If you get a chance to sit down with Tavares, you better not be in a pair of jeans winging it. Like, you gotta bring the heat, and you gotta try to sell him on whatever you're trying to sell him on. But what do you make of this? The idea that the Leafs are going to show some interest, and if they get a meeting with them, then they're not doing it just to waste time. They're going to try to find a deal.
Well, first thing I think of is, okay, so $12 million for Tavares, $12 million for Matthews, whatever for Marner, holy smokes, you're, you know, like that's the first thing I think of. But they've got bean counters that's going to figure that out. It would be exciting for the Leafs to add a player like Tavares, just to, you know, to look at what he's able to do, what he, in a style of game that he would be able to play, with the players that he'd be able to play with. And, I mean, it would be, how could you not be excited about it? As far as making a video about that stuff, like that stuff to me is so irrelevant. Like, who the hell cares? Great, you got a video department. Good for you guys. Like, I hope you do.
Well, we were saying like earlier, isn't $10 million a year or whatever it is in being a Maple Leaf and coming home and selling that dream, isn't that kind of a, like, that's the sell job? What the hell are you going to put on a video?
Well, so, like, you're going to walk into the locker room and they're going to have a 91 jersey hanging there with his name on it. Like, do you think that's going to make him go, oh, that's going to be my stall. I dream of that stall, and that's my team.
I'm sitting beside Austin Matthews.
Yeah, oh, isn't that great? I think when you say they're not going to wing it, of course they're not. They're going to, you know, Tavares and his camp is going to sit down, and they're going to have to go through their organization. Basically, the same thing they did with Babcock when they got him. Not that you open the financials up, but you open the books of the organization. These are the players we have. This is where we think we can go. This is another player we're going to try and get. You know, here's our roadmap. This is where we see you. This is the line we see you at. You know, like, that's pretty much what is of interest. Making a video or making a, I don't know. Dallas did it 1 year. They flew, Tom Hicks was the owner, and they went on private planes, like two different groups or three different groups. One was to Bill Guerin. Maybe one was to Pierre Turgeon. Might have the year mixed up there, but they flew these guys out on July 1st, and they presented, like, they had DVDs at the time and, like, videos of the players and, you know, shiny, glossy books and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the shiny, glossy book. It was the $45 million that probably made them be more interested in it.
Yeah, that's – I mean, I want to defend my – because Brian thinks that we were taking shots at it. I was just saying – I think Tavares' camp will know exactly what the Maple Leafs can offer, and I think what the Maple Leafs would be better served doing is, if their presentation was about a video and stuff, certainly you can have almost like an EA Sports simulation of him holding the cup and, you know, in a Maple Leaf jersey, all of that. That's kind of rah-rah. But I think this new management team, who are very crafty, you know, Gilman's a smart guy, Pridham's a smart guy, and we just had Kyle Dubas on, and he's a very smart guy as well. I think they could show Tavares behind the curtain, almost what you're saying, Ray, like a not opening all the books, but opening all the venues of how Tavares could maximize his brand in Toronto. And that could be put in a presentation that you can't verbalize. I think you could show it and say, you know, this is what you'd get paid to be a Maple Leaf. This is how big your brand could be in this city that you grew up in and you dreamed of.
Well, I don't see the numbers even factoring in. Like, you're not going to show up and be like, so we're thinking 3-year deal at around $6 million. Like, you're not going to, yeah, you know, like, the numbers don't even necessarily. I know what you're saying, off,
yeah,
the ice.
Yeah, I'm talking off
ice. But
again,
you guys, like, I think the video, I don't even know what it is. I think we envision something cheesy, like, you know, some guy that looks like a Tavares lookalike who shoots right. You know, like, somehow it's all just
comes
a disaster.
Skating, yeah.
But
just Joe from the Bridge skating around in a Tavares jersey.
Right. Like, I think I'd like to believe they're going to put more into it than that.
I think it would be funnier if they did something like that. You know, those like Letterkenny, have those guys skating around.
Maybe
and go
it is
flying
something like
into,
that.
Like,
you know?
I think that would actually lighten.
Who knows
the mood
what they're doing? But like,
we got to do a spoof video for John Tavares.
What our pitch
would
be?
I get actually Noodle stumbled onto something there about, like, the, you know, show what your brand can be and your,
yeah,
what the marketing can be. The hockey stuff needs to be presented and will be presented in something that really matters tangibly to him. Like, okay, so I'm on the power play. Who am I on the power play with? Who am I, you know, like, when we start, who do you envision my wingers to be? When I'm playing on the power play, am I playing in the bumper spot? Am I playing on the half wall? Where do you see me? Who am I on the ice with? Like, that's the stuff that the detail will get presented to Tavares in the four or five teams, whatever he's going to meet with, if it's not the Islanders. Like, that's, to me, that's the stuff that really matters, because the other stuff, that's what you're, you know, that's secondary to it all, because you can, we've seen guys make lots of money and be absolutely miserable, but they're miserable because the hockey sucks.
Well, Ray, if you're the team, aren't you looking at this and saying, if the wants are too much from this, and I'm not talking specifically about Tavares, but like if the guy's like, who am I playing with? What am I doing? Like, wouldn't a team sooner or later just said, you know what, maybe this guy, I'm turned off from this guy now, if there's too many ask. Yeah.
Depends who it is, right? If it's, I don't know, if it's Jay Beagle, I think that's probably a...
Yeah,
a page turner, and no disrespect, because I'd like that guy, and I would have him on my team if I could fit him in. I think he would be the type of player that would be an excellent fit in Toronto. Now, his dollars might be off the charts, and you can't pay him. But if he's asking who his wingers are, then that's a little different conversation than Tavares. Because if you're not telling Tavares, the next team is.
Yeah, I think he's getting every piece of information he wants. I do think, again, getting back to the this video, I'm Mr. Video here. I'm Team Video.
Why don't they get Mickelson, show him how to stick handle?
Well, I guess you could do that. Rule 14-5.
Brian's all over the rules today.
I'm all over all that kind of stuff. But you got to remember, there are two teams in the league that have a connection to John Tavares. Not one. There's two. The Islanders, clearly. That's the team he's always played. And then it's his hometown team that he grew up loving. That's the Maple Leafs. That's what he has different. I understand what you guys are saying. If the Red Wings are playing a video of him cruising around Little Caesars Arena, he's like, okay, cool. I don't have a connection. This kid, he went to the Air Canada Center growing up. This was the rink he dreamed of playing in. Like, that's what I'm saying here.
The jersey and winning.
Exactly. But, like, that's what I'm saying, Ray. Is that, like, if you got to this point in Vancouver, put together something, I would think you would have more of a connection to it than if, you know, some team that the Kings did. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's what the Leafs are
going to
try to
feed
off. You
would have the connection anyway, Brian.
Pardon?
I think you'd have the connection anyway.
You would, but I think you're trying to amplify that. Like, that's the that's what they can sell. Like,
right,
everyone's going to
give
around the same money. It's why, you know, come home and play for your hometown team.
Can you imagine sitting there this week if you're him, though? Like, the decision you're going to make, the tens of millions of dollars that are on the line, the chance to possibly put yourself in a spot, as good a spot as you can, to have a chance to win, which of course doesn't happen as much in the NHL or ever in the NHL like it does in the NBA. But you have a chance to do that. Like, wouldn't part of the discussion be, yeah, if I'm coming to Toronto, who else is coming with me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, like, basically that's what the NBA does, right? Like, LA might end up with those three guys, and you're like, or might, I mean, I guess it's talked about, but they want to know, okay, if I come, well, who else is coming? Like, you're in rarefied air if you're John Tavares to make a decision that other people just don't even get the ballpark of making.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder what Lou thinks of these rumblings.
That might be my video, is Lou. You don't want to be with this guy in Long Island.
Just Lou staring. Like, what if it's just 30 seconds of Lou staring into the screen?
Right.
And the
end of the video is Tavares in a beard, with a beard in Toronto.
Yeah, like long hair, locks.
You can have that here.
Tommy,
you're not getting
Fleetwood
that
hair and a beard.
How about if the Habs get one of these conversations? What do you think? You think Tavares could ask him why he traded Galchenyuk for Domi?
Hang on a sec. Has he said there's only a few teams that are doing this?
No. Darren reported that three to five teams are more than likely going to meet with him next week. And we don't know who those are going to be. The Habs are dying to be one of them. That's going to be the case.
They need centermen.
What do you make of that trade, Domi for Galchenyuk?
Well, I thought it was, you know, you're shuffling deck chairs around a little bit. I know, like, Max is a... You know, everybody that talks about him says what a terrific kid he is. And I'm going to take that out of the picture for a minute, because you've got a player that's a playmaking winger. Like, that's his calling card. He's a playmaking winger. He's got 9 goals in each of the last 2 years. 4 of them last year were into the empty net. and his career high is so far is 18. I think it's far more likely that Galchenyuk will score 30 more frequently than Domi will score 20. Because I don't think that's Max's game per se. Goals are bloody hard, and I would really have a tough time trading away goals over goals for assists. I would. I understand the inconsistencies of Galchenyuk. I think Montreal did to him zero favors in his career. As much as he's to take the blame for his inconsistencies and the way that he's played at times, and I don't know, almost a pouty way about him sometimes, the Canadiens did him no favors. They did zero as far as development with him. They threw him into the mix. They told him he was a winger. Then he was going to be a centerman for 3 games. Then he played wing. Then he went back and he played 20 games in the middle, and he did great. Then he got hurt. Like, it was a mess.
I wonder if they ever asked him where he wanted to play.
Well, I think they did, because he said he wanted to play center. He was going to play center last year. What did that start? 2 games, I think he played at the start of the year, and then he went back to the wing. Whether he's a centerman or a winger is almost irrelevant to me. What I don't understand is they constantly spoke, even publicly, about what Galchenyuk isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, it's different when us guys played. That's the way it went. Now it's about you pump the guy's tires when you can. You talk about what he can do. You find somebody else's BS about the 200-foot player. Find somebody else to play 200 feet. You've got a guy that can score. And they basically made him into a player that doubted his own ability and never performed. And so now they got Max Domi for him. And I think Galchenyuk will thrive. I really do. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a superstar, but I think he's a very good player. I think Max is a very good player, too. But he's not going to score anywhere in the ballpark of what Galchenyuk does. And if you're going to use Galchenyuk as a trade chip, would you not address where your biggest issue is? Try to address it, either on the blue line or in the middle. They don't need another winger.
That's the Bergevin way, Ray. Like, that's what it is. Why he hasn't found a center in 5 years.
When he mentioned that he has played some center, I was like, oh my God, they should tape his tongue. Like, you're going to put another winger in the middle? Well, that's not going to work.
No.
It just doesn't.
Well, I mean, Bergevin, he does have a lot of support in Montreal, so he's got that going for him.
Ray, who would that be by?
Himself. That's it.
Yes. Ray, I have to ask you one thing before we let you go.
Please.
How long do you keep your underwear? How many years?
Oh, I'm an underwear shopper.
Hayes keeps his underwear for 7 years. He has underpants.
Who does that? Years.
Hayes.
No, it's not like across the board.
You said at the beginning of the show you got underpants that are 70 years old.
I probably have a pair
or
two that are kicking around that have been around in the house for a long time.
Are you kidding me?
No, that's right.
I get outside at 2 years, they're gone.
So what, you guys, it's like an oil change? You mark them?
I just do it like out of a natural habit. Like, I go to a mall, I'm like, there's the underwear I wear, buy them.
I would suggest, though, the guy beside us,
pair.
Yeah.
He blows through more than anybody.
That's another thing. My sanitation is exquisite.
Mine go into the workout pile.
You know what that is.
The gold dust.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
Mine go into the workout pile. And then they go to the bin.
Yeah.
Finished.
The workout pile.
Yeah.
That's where you want to
try it. Turn the treadmill on.
No. I've got an elliptical. It's basically a lamp. It's a part of the decor now. All right, buddy. Well, we'll do it again either tomorrow or later in the week. I don't know when we get you back on.
No, tomorrow's no good. I've got a meeting. Yeah, oh, yes.
I'm moving into your house.
I've got a meeting.
Right. Well, say hi to the other three guys.
That hockey
in the
players don't have meetings, so it's golfing.
Right. I wouldn't even know where to go for a meeting.
No. Like, when I say that to someone, they just laugh and say, "You don't have a meeting."
You'd be Kramer with an empty briefcase just walking around.
I got a sandwich in a briefcase and a new sleeve of Titleist. Yeah. I'm on my way to a meeting.
We're meeting at the first tee. We'll see you there.
Talk to you Wednesday.
See ya. There's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Where's the rest of the read here? Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
Maple Toyota's loving you.
We love it.
We love them.
Thanks. Where's the rest of my read here?
Well, we'll talk about that in the break.
I got to go to the can.
Gold dust. Garrett Rank will join us next. Thanks for listening to Overdrive. Visit TSN1050.ca where you can win $1,000 in free golf from underpar.com. We'll also award five runners-up with $100 gift cards. Enter up to once per day until July 1st. Pay less and play more with underpar.com. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Brooks Koepka, back-to-back U.S. Open champ. It was a pretty wild weekend. I mean, the scores were completely out of whack, but there were memorable moments. And for us, this was something we were anticipating for a while because Garrett Rank, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Who qualified for the U.S. Open as an amateur and is an NHL referee.
I know.
Like, everyday referee.
Exactly.
He joined us a couple of weeks ago. We had a blast talking to him, and he was there doing his thing.
Yeah.
And we told him, we're going to bother you again on the Monday after the U.S. Open. I'm shocked he decided to actually come back.
Great.
But here he is, NHL ref, U.S. amateur, I guess you could call him that, Canadian amateur, playing at the U.S. Open. Here's Garrett Rank. How you doing, Garrett?
Great, fellas. How are you?
We're doing awesome, man. What was that like? What was it like being down there at Shinnecock, and what was the U.S. Open like for you?
Well, first off, it was a bit of a carnage, a bit of a train wreck on Thursday. But aside from that, one of the funnest weeks of my life, probably the coolest experience I'll ever have in golf, and we had a lot of fun.
How difficult was the course? Like, we watched it. It looked just borderline impossible, but being out there for 36 holes, how difficult was it to play?
I can't really say it was manageable. It was fair, but you almost had to hit like a perfect golf shot every time. To put it in perspective for people, imagine going playing your home course, tightening up the fairways a little bit, but then if you're not in the fairway, you're in knee-high, deep rough, trying to slash the ball back down into play. And then dealing on Thursday and Saturday with really firm greens and really windy conditions and a lot of crosswinds. And man, you just had to keep your ball in the fairway and then just hope trying to get it on the green. I had to have a good laugh with my brother. He's like, dude, just hit it in the fairway. And I'm like, I'm trying to hit it in the fairway every shot. And then he's like, well, just get it on the green. I'm like, I've aimed for the middle of every green. It's not working. So a tough test, but little disappointed with how I played, but what a great experience overall.
What did you make of the course? That's the big debate going on. Is it good for golf watching these guys do this? They know everyone says it's only once a year. Bryson DeChambeau called it clown golf. Like, was it too much? I know that you're an amateur and you obviously found it difficult, but was it too much?
I never got to play on Saturday. Saturday was the day that they were kind of questioning the course setup and the course conditions. Thursday was just a big eye-opener because of the wind change and the speed of the winds at like 6:30 in the morning. We're already 30 miles an hour. So playing the practice rounds, the winds weren't up in the morning, and it was a totally different direction than the winds in the afternoon. So that was the biggest eye-opener for me, and I can't really speak on the course conditions on Saturday.
With Garrett Rank, NHL ref, who's an amateur golfer and qualified for this weekend's U.S. Open, just around the locker rooms in the clubhouse, were players taking runs at the course and the USGA? Like, some of them were doing it publicly, but behind the scenes, were you noticing that a lot of the players, the pros, especially the higher-end guys like McIlroy and Woods and Spieth, were they really rattled with what was going on?
I didn't see anybody breaking any sticks over the door or anything like that, but I saw one really big name punch a sign in the locker room and, like, storm out of there really quickly. I mean, I know how hard I found it, and I mean, those guys are way better at golf than me, and they were struggling. I took some comfort in being, I think I was 12 over through, like, you know, 14, 15 holes, and I saw McIlroy sign. He was 10 over through, you know, 12 or 13. So I was like, wow, like, this is really playing this hard.
the crowds, a lot was being made out of the crowds, and a lot of players were complaining that
about the stupid things they were saying.
Yeah.
Oh God, they were ridiculous.
Yeah. Did you get any like interesting chirps or chirps offside sent your way?
I was actually treated like a rock star all week. It was so cool. And Mackenzie said to me afterwards, he's like, "Dude, you're so lucky. Like, we don't get treated like that ever." And he's like, "You're pretty much like a rock star." I on the 14th hole on Friday, I was playing all right. I think I was one or two over for the round, and this drunk guy in the stands just stands up and screams as loud as he can. He goes, "Hey Garrett, we hate refs, but today we like you."
That's awesome.
And then you'd hit a shot, and people would be like, "Smash the Timbits," or. You know, there's a lot of kind of bargaining for calls on their team. Like, "We need more slashing calls on Pittsburgh," or "You got to help the Islanders out." So it was a lot of ref-related things, but it was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, I read this morning that someone was basically campaigning for you to give Pittsburgh more penalties. So it wasn't even about their own team. Like, don't hook up my own team.
Must have been a Philadelphia Flyers fan or someone.
It had to be a Flyers fan. Just hates Pittsburgh so much, and they want you to get it back. With Garrett Rank, NHL ref, who was playing in the U.S. Open this past weekend. You said you weren't actually out there on Saturday, but you would have seen what happened with Phil Mickelson on 13, where he basically went Happy Gilmore and said, "I'm done. I'm going to take my two-stroke penalty." He hit the ball while it was still moving, and that thing was going to roll right off the green. What did you make of that, even just as a spectator, watching Phil Mickelson do that on Saturday?
So, really cool story for me. The USGA actually asked me to come play as a marker on Sunday for the first group because they had an uneven number of players playing. So I was off on Sunday with the first group, and I played with Beef, Andrew Johnson, and he was hilarious. A lot of fun to play with him. But he was playing with Phil on Saturday when he did it. And I didn't want to bring the subject up or ask him about it, but he brought it up before we even got to the second tee, and he's like, "Man, did you see that yesterday?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "What'd you think?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Like, I'm not really in a position to talk about it." He's like, "I was so caught off guard." But the funniest thing was, he goes, he hits his putt, and then he goes and he hits the ball while it's rolling, and then he just goes, stands there, puts his marker down, and just looks at me, and he goes, "I'll wait." And he's like, "I had to go a putt." And he's like, I was in shock. I didn't know what happened. And he's like, all I could really do is laugh. He's like, "I've never seen anything like that before."
It's a good point, because he did mark the ball afterwards.
He's like, "I'll wait."
And then he gets back into like tour mode. He's like, "All right, you're away." Like, I know, I don't want to, you know, my etiquette is very important at this point, after he just blew through etiquette on the previous shot. I mean, what about as a ref, though? I mean, I would have disqualified Phil. You must have, like, did the ref in you just want to get in there and basically give it to Mickelson for being so cavalier with the rules?
I don't know what the actual rule in that situation is. I know you can argue for disqualification. I know you can argue for, you know, the two-stroke penalty for hitting the ball while it was moving. At the end of the day, his ball was going to roll off the green. He was going to chip it up, and he was probably going to two-putt. So, you know, he got one more. He had to count one more stroke than probably he actually would have got. So, I'm in really no position to speak on it, but I think, I mean, he shot 81 or made a 10 or whatever it was, and so I think he had kind of, the course had just kind of gotten to him at that point.
So if that was anybody else, but for like, he should have been disqualified. Like, if it was anybody, if it wasn't Phil, somebody would have been disqualified for that. That's what I think.
And I think if he was close, if he was in contention, maybe even more so, because if he had won it and like that was hanging over the tournament, that he didn't get disqualified. The fact that he was so far out of it, I think they were almost,
yeah, they gave Phil a break.
Basically, give him a pass. Let Phil go out there and just toot around on Sunday, but. What's your story now, Garrett? I mean, what's the golf routine like the rest of the summer? The NHL season's still a few months away. Where do you take it from here?
I have a really cool opportunity. I accepted a sponsored exemption to play in the PGA Tour Canada event down at Ambassador Golf Club in Windsor. So that's the beginning of July, so I'll play that. I'm actually playing tomorrow in the start of the Ontario Men's Mid-Am Championship. I'm paired with Ashley Chinner and Mark Savard, so I'm sure there'll be a little bit of hockey story shared out there tomorrow.
Nice.
And then playing the Canadian Am and the US Am, and then it's time to get ready for the hockey season.
Well, good luck with the rest of the summer. It was awesome tracking you this week, and I hope you enjoyed it. It sounds like you did, and I'm sure we'll catch up again down the road. Thank you for doing this, Garrett.
Awesome, guys. Thanks. I just wanted to ask O-Dog if he ever got any favors from the refs when he was playing, just like Phil did. But
No, zero. Zero. Billy McCreary is a good friend of mine, and he screwed me over more times than not. So zero breaks.
We're pro-ref, though, now.
Yeah, because we are pro-ref.
Love it. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Garrett Rank.
He's awesome.
Pro ref on this show. Until the games actually start.
Yeah. He's our buddy until he just butchers a call. Imagine he butchered a call and cost the Leafs a playoff series.
We should go back and
hate him.
Look if he was, like, how many games he officiated of the Maple Leafs this past year. I would assume he had a handful of games.
Yeah,
probably.
A handful of Toronto, and I know a handful of Ottawa. Because I've flown with him, like he's like me. He's on the first flight back the next day, and we would sit and BS a little bit. And he's a good ref, good young ref. Like that's what the league needs is guys like that who are confident, they're affable. You got to be able to talk to them and approach them, and
you're
going to make mistakes. But I have no problem with guys like that. The problem I have is guys who don't have a feel for the game. And they're so insecure that they take it upon themselves to make too many calls, if that makes sense, to impose their authority. Let the game play out.
Yep. Put yourself in the jackpot. in the jackpot.
We got to get that. My ass in the jackpot. Our asses are in the jackpot for this.
That's a drop from here on out. That and Gold Dust.
Gold Dust is awesome.
All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and recap what has been a fun afternoon. Overdrive continues on TSN2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on Arizona in Anaheim taking on the Angels tonight. I'll also take San Fran at home against Miami. And Cleveland, home plus against the Chicago White Sox. Don't forget, always fade Baltimore, too. Throw that in there if you have to. Throw down 20, you can score 74. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine.
I want you to pick a Baltimore win one of these days.
I will. I'll pick a win. All right, boys.
That's good.
Good stuff this afternoon. Really exciting stuff.
Brought the heat.
I thought so.
We'll be better even tomorrow, and it's going to start
at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.